Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is your host, Tom Hallman. We've all been in conflict. In a moment, something changed, and now you see things differently than your friend does. Emotions grow strong, and the stakes grow high. What do you do? Perhaps you withdraw and hope it blows over. Or perhaps you vent your frustrations and apologize later. But there's a better way. At this year's fall conference, Beth Drips and I led a breakout session with the goal of equipping you with practical tools to resolve conflict, while you also get to observe a quote-unquote real-life conflict worked out right in front of you. Here's Beth and I on the session we called When Friends Fight, Practical Tools for Conflict Resolution.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Thank you for coming to When Friends Fight. I'm excited to have you here. My name is Beth Drips, and this is my coworker, Tom Hallman. Tom and I both live in State College, and we work for Disciple Makers at the headquarters office there. And if you talk with Tom now, you would never guess that this funny, friendly, kind guy used to be an atheist who loved nothing better than to debate with Christians and try to prove them wrong. But that all changed when, plot twist, Tom became a Christian himself in college. Now Tom loves to work through potentially stressful conversations in a way that builds relationships rather than breaks them. And so he has a lot of good things to say about this topic. If you talk with me, you'll get a different impression than if you talk with Tom. You will learn quickly that I'm a straight shooter. I have a hard time concealing my thoughts and emotions, and I tend to be a what you see is what you get kind of person. In fact, sometimes I'm surprised when other people find open disagreement and the process of working toward some sort of consensus to be stressful, because I really love that kind of conversation typically. But both Tom and I, we have strengths and weaknesses of our different personalities, and we both have learned a lot from God's word about how to handle difficult conversations. And recently, we've both been impacted by a book called Crucial Conversations. I'll show you what it looks like here in case you go on Amazon later. It's called Crucial Conversations. This book has really been helpful for us, and some of the concepts we'll talk about in the session we'll reference from here. We intend to make this session worth your time by introducing you to a few key principles that have really reshaped the way that Tom and I approach conflict and seek to build unity. We'll introduce each principle, and then we're going to illustrate it in a fun way via the dramatic talents of some of your favorite Disciple Maker staff. They will be reenacting a situation that could occur in a dorm room or apartment near you. After each scene, we'll pause and as a group, we'll discuss what happened and where you see the principles that we talk about here applied or not applied, maybe. So I ask that as they enact, that you will listen well and be an active observer so that you can participate. That's where we'll really get a lot of benefit out of this session. So now that you know how we're going to organize here, we'll go ahead and get started. I want to begin with the first point on your outline. The outline we're using is on page 36 of the packet. And the first point there says silence or violence. I want to begin by defining a potential conflict, okay? And I do want to be upfront with the main application that we are hoping that you take from this, this whole session. And that is that we want to give you some key tools to use the next time you approach a conflict or just a difficult conversation. But back to our definition. When you find that opinions vary, that emotions run high or run strong and the stakes are high, this is when you have high potential for conflict. This might seem really intuitive, but especially if you don't just find yourself landing in one and you're thinking about a hard conversation you have to have, when opinions will vary, when stakes are high and emotions run strong, you can all but guarantee that you are setting yourself up for a conflict scenario. Now, we run into these kind of situations all the time, don't we? I mean, whether with our parents, with professors or bosses or coworkers, with friends, with classmates, with, oh my goodness, group project members, right? with your neighbors above or below or through the wall. Every time you call customer service, you are encountering one of these scenarios. Opinions are likely to vary. Stakes might be high and opinions could run strong. In these interactions as Christians, we long to think and to act in a way that honors God and that promotes unity, but because this is what the Bible calls us to do. And in Ephesians 4, Paul really expands on how we can act to build unity. He talks about being humble and gentle and patient and bearing with one another in love. And when we read that passage, it's really, it paints this beautiful picture. And we think, yeah, I want to do that. But instead of doing this, we are often tempted away from faith that God is at work in the situation. And so we abandon love, we abandon a servant's attitude, and we give in to two alternate responses. And that is the title of your first point. We tend to give in to either silence or violence. Those are the terms that Crucial Conversations uses when they describe this kind of behavior. When Crucial Conversations is talking about silence, what they mean is that we, in the face of conflict, withdraw from a person or a subject. We just try to avoid it. It can show up as a very sort of under-the-radar kind of thing of just sort of, I just don't happen to be where that person is whenever they're there. I don't know how it happens. It just happens. But it can come across a little bit more bitter than that. For example, silence could come up as sarcasm or as sugarcoating your opinion or even couching your opinion so that you can underestimate and understate it or show it selectively just to avoid a conflict. When the scripture talks about this, it doesn't call it silence. The scripture calls this kind of behavior fearing man, mocking, and lying. Violence occurs, on the other hand, when we move from persuading to convincing by force. And this is certainly just as ugly as a silent response. It looks very controlling and coercive, trying to make others accept our point of view and own it as their own. It can show up as things like cutting other people off or overstating your facts, speaking in absolutes, changing the subject, using directive questions to control the conversation, labeling people or their ideas in order to dismiss them, and even in threatening and belittling other people. These are strong terms, and the scripture calls these ways of behaving rude, prideful, hateful, and even it calls them murder. I don't know if any of these descriptions resonate with you, but to my shame, they do with me. I find myself tempted in both areas, but more especially to the violent responses and approaches. And you might find yourself more prone to one or the other, kind of an equal opportunity sinner if you find yourself going for both. But most of us will resort to these responses at various times when we abandon our faith in God in the midst of a conflict. There's a quote I love from an author named Anne Voskamp, and she reflects on Matthew 15:18 when she talks about why we respond the way we do. She says, "The tongue is the tail end of the heart." So if you think about the head being the heart and the tail being the tongue, the one influences the other. You are about to see a conversation turned conflict right before your eyes. It will be acted out. Take your drinks of water now. For the rest of us, as you observe, I'm asking you to please listen for signals that the conflict has begun. And once the conflict occurs, would you listen for where the characters abandon their faith in God and start resorting to silence or violence instead? Some of these cues might be really obvious. Some of them might be a little more subtle, but I think we'll be able to help each other discern this. And then after that, we will talk about the first part of the fable we're about to see. Now, in order for this to make sense, let me tell you where we are and what is going on. And I think there's a slide here even to help with that. So where we are in Brad's dorm room. Hi, Brad.
Hey.
This is a weeknight in late September. And all of these friends up here are sophomores who became good friends their freshman year. Okay? So if I'm going to introduce these people to you, this might be helpful as the conversation starts going. Tom, would you like to introduce these people? Would you like to introduce them? No? Okay, I'll keep going. All right, then. Okay, here at the far end on your left, you have Tony. Okay?
What's up?
This is Tony. Tony, when you think about him, he is talented, high energy. He's an accounting major from Philadelphia, or Philly, as he would say. His great loves are sports, family, and friends. And an important fact about Tony is that he has a complicated family. He is from a single-parent home, and his younger brother is autistic. And so he's got a lot on his mind when he's at school. Next is, of our list of friends here, is Michelle. Michelle is outgoing and outspoken. She's an early education major from New Jersey, and she started dating her new boyfriend, Mike, who you'll hear more about, in April of last year. Mike isn't present, but he's going to play a significant role in this conversation. After Michelle, you have Jasmine. And Jasmine is capable, hardworking. She came from a farm in Lancaster County in Pennsylvania. She's an ag engineering major, and she is feeling a little bit over her head this semester with the heavy course load that she has. I don't know why everyone's laughing. I'm going to just keep going here. Last of all, we have Brad. Brad is quiet, laid back. He's a history major from a small town in northwestern Pennsylvania. He loves good coffee and sleeping as late as possible. Pretty much, he's one of my best friends. The friend group that's gathered here often meets in Brad's room because it's the biggest and the nicest room. And the last friend that you need to know about is Carl. He's also not present, but he figures in this conversation. Carl is Tony. Hey, Tony.
Yeah.
Tony's former roommate. Okay. So with all that said, all those characters you can reference whenever you need to. We're going to leave this slide up and go ahead, take it away, Act 1.
Yo! Guys, it's the first time I've seen you guys since last spring. How you guys been?
I totally agree, Tony. It has been a long time since we hung out. I've really missed you guys, and I am doing so great. Mike and I are about to celebrate our 5-month anniversary.
Yeah, so that's, you know, almost an important milestone.
I know it doesn't sound very long, but wow, I've never been in a relationship that's gone this well for so long. He's just such a great guy. Thoughtful, sweet, patient. And way cute.
I can't say I ever thought of Mike as cute, but then again, I haven't seen him since last year. So what's he been up to anyway?
Yeah, Mike's been busy since we got back. You know, he's pledging, and it takes a lot of time. I feel like I barely see him these days, but I do get to see him later tonight.
Oh, come on, Michelle. You see him almost every night. It's us you never see.
Yeah, she's got a point, Shelly. Based on what we've seen on Facebook, you guys have been together literally almost every minute of your lives.
Like, you should talk, Tony, Mr. I go home every weekend. Ready, guys? Who am I? Oh, no, man. I can't make it to the movie Friday night. I'm going home. Oh, no, sorry, Brosif. I don't get back until crazy o'clock on Sunday.
Oh, don't even.
Yo, dog, what's a Saturday? Really? They have those in college now?
Okay, all right, Shelly, let me put it in a way that you'll understand. Ew, whatever. But seriously, guys, like, I gotta go home, I gotta take care of my brother. Like, family comes first, right? It's priorities.
Right, priorities. Like basketball and ultimate frisbee, right?
Sure, yeah. I enjoy a solid game of ultimate. Okay, so yeah, I'll go out and play a couple times. I enjoy a solid game. All right. B-Dog. Yeah, what have you been up to this summer?
Not much. Like, yeah, not a whole lot. I mean, summer went by like really fast for me. I don't know about you guys. I kind of missed you guys. Like, it's kind of lonely back home. I don't have much to do. Like, everyone's got jobs and stuff going on. And I don't know. Anyway, hey Tony, like, how's Carl doing, man? I haven't seen him around. Like, he hasn't returned any of my texts. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, you didn't hear, man. Carl, he didn't come back. His grades weren't good enough, or something. I don't know. I sure miss him though. He was a good roommate. My new roommate, though, he's doing the freshman thing of partying constantly. At least that's what I think he's doing. He's always come back at like 2 a.m. And when I get back each weekend, our room smells like a frat house. Oh, sorry, Shelly. I know some girls dig that.
Whatever.
Dude, that's a bummer about Carl. He was way cool. Always up for hanging out.
Yeah, it's nice to hear that some people still like that.
You okay, Jazz?
I've been better.
You want to talk about it?
No, I'm fine. If you guys just want to obsess about Ultimate Frisbee and boyfriends and people who aren't here, that's totally up to you.
Well, this just got awkward.
Jazz, I am not obsessed with Mike.
Michelle, when is the last day you didn't see Mike?
Well, just last week. Tuesday, I think, or Monday. But that doesn't mean I'm obsessed.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with the game of Ultimate, Jazz. Like, you should stop and, like, combine, hang out, and play with us. I'll teach you sometime.
Tony, it's the end of the semester. This is the first time we've all hung out, all semester. And at least twice now, when we've all tried to hang out, not on a weekend, by the way, why couldn't you make it? Sports. And that's fine. You can do whatever you want. But you are kind of obsessed.
Okay, so you think I should just sit around in a room all day waiting for you guys to come by and hang out? Like, how's that working for you, Jazzy?
Look, I said it's fine. You guys all have your own priorities, and you're free to do whatever you want. Tony, have a blast. Score lots of points. Michelle, tell Mike I said hi, okay?
Anyone up for some Settlers of Catan?
Okay, pause. We are going to stop the fable here for a moment and take a step back from the external action. We're going to jump inside of Michelle, Jasmine, Tony, and Brad's heads. Tell us your monologues, guys.
Dang, where did that come from? Jazz sends us like 50 messages to arrange a hangout, and when we finally show up, she's like, drama. What's gotten into that girl? I suppose she's lonely or stressed or, I don't know, jealous. I don't understand that girl one bit. I'll tell you what, though. A game of Ultimate sounds pretty good right now.
What a self-centered little brat. I finally find a decent guy and upset, and instead of being happy for me, she says I'm obsessed. Ugh. Jasmine used to be the sweetest girl, and I don't know what happened to her this summer, but it's not fair that Mike and I get blamed for it. And frankly, I don't think I have the emotional energy to deal with her right now. Well, at least I get to see Mike in a couple hours. That's an easy relationship.
Tony and Michelle seriously need to grow up. In the real world, you can't just do whatever you want. Haven't they learned anything from Carl flunking out? We're sophomores now. It's time to grow up, buckle down, and get serious. First, you get your work done. Then you spend time with people important to you. And then you play sports and go on dates and pledge fraternities and all that. These guys just don't get that, and I'm concerned for them.
Okay, I prefer my room about 95% less crazy. Like, I don't even know what the big deal is. Like, can't we just relax and have a good time?
Okay, thanks, friends. So, and now to you all. We have a couple of mic runners here to help amplify our voices so we can all hear, and so that later when you want to listen again, you can hear the discussion that comes up. The question I'd like to put to you is, where did you see the need for some conflict resolution? That is, where did you see that opinions varied, stakes were high, or that emotions ran strong?
Don't be shy.
Did you see anyone in these conversations using silent tactics or violent tactics, perhaps? A few, okay.
Is this thing on? Okay, so I think the thing I noticed more than anything was Brad. Like, you're pretty chilled most of the time, man, which is kind of the way I am, too. So I think I noticed that a lot. But I think he also was trying to pretend that everything was okay. You know, like, come on, guys, we're all friends. Like, let's just be friends now. And I think, like, the other three were having a lot of conflict going on, and he was trying to ignore it, which is kind of the way I tend to lean also. So I think he was using silence in one sense there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate that. I appreciate, too, how you connected to how you can relate to the silent tendencies that Brad could have. In some ways, they were helpful, right? He wasn't amplifying the conflict. But in other ways, maybe he could have played more of a role in seeing something going on and helping his friends. What else did you guys notice? What kind of silent or violent things did you see, Abby?
Well, Michelle made fun of Tony using, like, three different scenarios. Like, even after he was like, all right, like, ha, that was funny, like, she kept going, like, mm-hmm. kept pushing it, the fact that he was never around on the weekends. And mm-hmm. then, like, Tony did, like, a similar thing where he, like, was like, oh, let me put this two way, like, in a way that you'll understand.
Yeah.
Those are just kind of, like, pushing people's buttons just a little bit.
Right, yeah. And there may have even been, I appreciate you pointing that out, because humor can be tricky. It can't it. Like, sometimes things are funny, and sometimes it's not funny. And sometimes that's where conflict actually starts, when somebody thought it was funny and the other person didn't think so. Yeah. Any other points where you were really aware of a silent or a violent response?
Well, it seemed like some of the things that Tony was using, or that could have been perceived as humor, were actually passive-aggressive digs, like the, oh, I'm sorry, I think some girls like that, Shelley.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of sarcasm detected, which is unfortunately the way my family deals with conflict a lot, so got kind of used to recognizing that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, when it's sarcasm and everything is totally lighthearted and there's nothing underlying, maybe it's just funny, but when there's actually a thing going on, it's probably not just funny. Yeah, that was a good observation. There are a lot of not very friendly moments happening between these friends here, and they're kind of in a little bit of a pickle right now. So we're going to have more time for comment later, but right now I'm just going to ask Tom, can you help us with what is happening here? We are not in a good state. Yes.
We are hopefully going to be able to give them some useful tools, and in doing so, give you guys some useful tools to help resolve some of the very messy situations that we can find ourselves in. We very much see trends towards silence and violence. And just another one to be explicit about is, you know, Jasmine is the one that brought up, kind of instigated what became the conflict, just mm-hmm. with some of the comments. Now, I don't think that means she was the guilty party or everybody else was innocent, as you guys pointed out, but I think that was just a noteworthy thing, that she, in some way, was the one who was saying, hey, guys, there's a problem here, and we need to talk about it. So what we want to do now is add some tools to our conflict resolution tool belts. How can we work towards this? And this is the second point on your outline. The first tool I want to talk about right now is what we call safety. Safety is, it's basically, if someone's not feeling safe, then they're going to move towards silence or violence. It's kind of like if you're the silence kind, you're the rabbit in the hole. You know, you're not feeling safe, and so you're not coming out of the hole. You're just keeping it all underneath. And the violence portion, when you're not feeling safe, is it's like you picture like a soldier who doesn't have very good fortifications to hide behind. So you're just going to sit there and get, you know, bombed, or you have to be offensive. You need to go and attack. And that's the mindset when you're not feeling safe. And among our friends here, we see Jasmine and Brad, I think, pretty clearly in the more silence side. They're not being totally forthright with all they're saying. Well, maybe Tony and Michelle are more of the violence. It's kind of, you know, there's being sarcastic back and forth with each other, whether it's friendly or even a little pointed. They're going back and forth quite a bit and lashing out when hurt, especially when the term obsessed comes out. You know, when Jasmine, a couple points, pointed out that they're obsessed with sports or boys, and they're both pretty hurt by that and start saying hurtful things back. There's not much safety happening in this group right now. So how can we build safety? How can our friends here build safety? Because if you can rebuild that safety into a conversation, then you can actually have meaningful dialogue again, rather than just attacking each other or playing kind of a passive-aggressive game. So one way to develop safety is what we call mutual purpose. And mutual purpose means that we're working towards a common goal, a mutual purpose. And what that means is others believe that I care about their goals and their interests and their values, and I believe that they care about mine. And like, so have you ever noticed that you can, that if someone you trust says hard things to you, you'll receive them well? But if you don't trust someone, it doesn't even really matter how graciously they put it. You just don't hear it. You do not trust them. No matter how positively they will say it. And that's because you don't believe that you guys have mutual purpose. You feel like they don't understand you or your goals, and so it's hard to dialogue. But think about the people you do trust. Maybe your best friend or a boyfriend or girlfriend, someone that just is... you're really close with, that you feel like gets you, right? And you have the same vision, the same values. You're seeing what they're seeing and vice versa. You'll receive even really painful things from them. If they have something critical to say, you're like, yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you. That's all based on the mutual purpose idea. Now, finding mutual purpose is sometimes really difficult, especially when emotions are stirred up. But thankfully, for those of us here who are Christians, we're actually commanded to have mutual purpose. We consider things like the Great Commission. Consider all the calls in the scriptures to love one another and to be good stewards together of what God has entrusted with us, to us, knowing that we'll be perfectly united with Christ in the age to come. Though our majors and our family situations and our backgrounds and our giftings and our preferences and our particular roles in the campus fellowship or otherwise, these all vary quite a bit. But as Christians, we have so very much in common. And Christians of all people really should have mutual purpose. And it's a glorious one at that. So how do you develop this mutual purpose and thereby create safety where it's lacking? Well, I'm going to list two, and the first one didn't actually make it onto your outline, so you can kind of insert it there, is asking forgiveness. Asking forgiveness does much to build this mutual purpose and create safety. And so that just means take ownership for what you can. It doesn't mean that the whole situation is your fault. Things are rarely that black and white. It's not all his fault or her fault or all my fault. It's not usually how it works. But there's usually something that you can own, that you can, you know, to say, you know, I felt hurt by this, what you did, but the way I responded wasn't helpful. Would you forgive me for that response? You're not saying everything here is my fault. It's all me. Sorry. But you're just saying this part, at least I know I shouldn't have done what I did. And so, for example, ask forgiveness when you've failed to draw out the other person and really listen well to them. Like a biblical reference for that would be Proverbs 18:2, if that sounds like you. Or have you ever been in a position where you failed to bear with someone patiently? You just become impatient with them and you expected more from them? A scripture verse might be 1 Thessalonians 5:14, talks about the importance of that. Or that you've not spoken lovingly. You've been critical sarcastic, rude in some way. Ephesians 4:15 is a verse that speaks to that. Or, you know, for me often, it's just being plain selfish. I wanted something or I don't like what someone else is doing and I make it all about me. And so something like Philippians 2, you can just read the first, you know, 10 verses or so there. And those are all things that we failed to do that. We can ask for forgiveness and say, please, I've been selfish or I didn't listen to you well and really hear what you were saying. Would you please forgive me for that? And you can now enter into dialogue. To humble yourself before someone else does much to make them feel safer around you. So that's the first way to build mutual purpose. And the second way, and the last one I'll mention here, is contrasting. Contrasting. Let's say in the course of discussion that you realize that someone is misunderstanding your perspective and therefore there's no mutual purpose and they feel unsafe. They may be hearing what you're saying as something bigger or worse than you intended. Like you're not trying to say, you are a wicked person and I hate you, but you're trying to make a point, right? When you notice that's happening, use contrasting. And by contrasting, it just means you clearly point out what you don't mean, followed by what you do mean. You set up a contrast. This step alone can do wonders for rebuilding safety. So let me give you an example from our scenario over here. At the beginning, it's clear that Jasmine is feeling particularly hurt, aka unsafe, claiming that Michelle is obsessing over Mike and Tony is obsessing over sports, right? Now, At this point, any of them really could have entered in and started using contrasting to rebuilding safety. But let's just look at one possibility. Do you remember how Tony responded when she said that? He said, there's nothing wrong with a game or two of Ultimate. You know, I just enjoy the game. Now, so he's feeling defensive, right? He's feeling unsafe, not understood. And when that happens, he's not going to feel any safer. What if Jasmine responded the way she did? She said, this is the first time we've hung out all semester, and even when we've tried to get together, sports is always getting in the way. Now, maybe her real hang-up is Ultimate Frisbee, but probably not, right? There's probably something more going on. And in fact, if she used contrasting in that moment, I think she would have gone really far in just making the conversation more solid. So, for example, what if she instead said, Tony, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with playing Ultimate, which is how Tony heard it. Instead, what I am saying is I've missed seeing you. And we're a lot of the way through the semester, and this is the first time we're hanging out. Wouldn't that build mutual purpose? Because right out of the gates, the very first thing that Tony was saying at the beginning of our skit was, man, it's so good to see you guys. Like, he wants to be together with them. And Jasmine wants to hang out, whether it's on a weekend or not. And so they have mutual purpose. But by using these other techniques, by being more critical and such, it wasn't helping. And the contrasting would have done much. So let's now utilize some of these tools, encourage our actors here to utilize some of these tools, and then we're going to do the same sort of thing. They're going to act out a little bit more of the real-life scenario, what's happening here. We're going to pause. We're going to get inside their heads, and I'm going to ask you guys for what you observed. Where did you see safety, mutual purpose, asking for forgiveness, and contrasting? So, you guys are up.
What's the deal, Jazz? Weren't you the one who suggested we hang out tonight?
Exactly. Because if I didn't suggest it, would any of you even notice or care?
Of course we would, Jazzy. You know that. You guys are some of my best friends in the world, and we've always been there for one another, right? I don't think any of us would have gone through last year without each other.
Well, it sure feels like we're on our own this year.
Yeah. Maybe a round of catchphrase would help?
Mm-hmm. Okay, hold up, Brad. Jazz, do you feel like we've been, ignoring you or something?
No. Kind of. I don't know. Look, I know I sound selfish. I don't mean to be. But last year, Michelle was the one who got everyone together, even when schedules were tight. But this year, well, it's nearly October. I'm not blaming you, Michelle. I know Mike means a lot to you. It just seems like whenever you send a text, everyone responds right away. But when I do, nothing.
Jeez, Jazz, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ignore you or any of you guys. I've just had a crazy time balancing stuff lately.
Oh, Jazzy, I'm sorry too. Why didn't you say something sooner? I don't want you to feel ignored. I want you to be happy. We all want that.
This isn't about being happy, Michelle. You're missing the point.
Okay, I'm confused then. What is the point?
Do you mind if I take a stab at it? It sounds like you feel like we don't care. Like you're not important to us. Like the rest of us have stuff going on and you haven't been a part of it.
Yeah, that's part of it. But the thing is, I do have a lot of stuff going on. It's just not the good kind of stuff.
Wait, what do you mean?
I don't want to bother you guys with all the details.
Jazzy, we want to know.
Well, you guys remember how much I struggled with biology last semester, right? Well, I passed, but barely. And then, as I'm packing up my car to come back, my dad told me that he's not sure he can keep paying my tuition come next year. And so, if I can't pull my grades up... And then I find out that Carl didn't come back. I just feel so ashamed. Like, maybe I'm not cut out for college. Maybe I should just drop out and go back to the farm. I just really needed someone to talk to, but none of you guys were around.
Oh, Jazzy, I'm so sorry. I had no idea.
Thanks, Shell. And I'm sorry, too. It's not right of me to take out my frustrations on you guys.
Yeah, it's okay, Jazzy. We can take it. We love you, and we're glad you're here. And besides, biology is dumb anyways. Like, name me one way biology has helped out with anything.
Thanks, Tony. I feel so much better now. So, you guys aren't angry?
No, I was just confused.
You sure sounded angry.
Well, maybe I was a little angry.
You sure sounded a lot.
All right, not helping Brad, okay? Jazz, we're not mad at you, but next time, you know, maybe just let us know a little sooner, okay?
Okay, pause. Let's go inside their heads and hear their inner thoughts. Tony starts out.
At first, I couldn't believe Jazz was freaking out so much, but now I can see where she was coming from. It is pretty rotten that I didn't even know she was having all that trouble. But that girl's got to speak up more. And I suppose I could skip a game or two to come by and just hang out once in a while.
I'm so glad Jazz is bringing this stuff up now. That explains a ton. Oh, I hope she'll still be okay with me leaving to see Mike later. I know. Maybe I could help her find a boyfriend.
Wow, it feels like such a relief to finally have that out there. I didn't even realize how upset I'd been. I do wish I didn't think that kind of stuff. I know they're my friends. It's just hard sometimes, knowing that they all have other things going on. Are they prioritizing the right things? Or maybe I'm the weird one.
Whew! I am so glad that's over. Time for Scattergories. I love Scattergories.
All right, mic runners. What did these guys do well, and what did they not do well, based on the tools that we just learned about?
I mean, I feel like Jasmine didn't feel safe at first, and then Tony, he showed the compassion that he cared about her, and then Jasmine started talking, like, explaining her problems, which helped a lot in that situation.
Yeah.
So, like, just showing that little thing that you care.
Yeah.
Makes people feel safe.
That's right. Yeah, just that compassion really built the safety, coaxed the rabbit out of the hole to share what was really going on.
I one of the things I noticed was that, like, in the second half, like, they actually started to really listen to each other and try and get to the heart of what the actual issue was, mm-hmm. rather than just going back and forth and, like, attacking each other. They were actually trying to get to the bottom of the heart of the issue.
That's right. Yeah, there was more listening that was really taking place at that point. Good. What else? What did they do well? What did they not do well?
Brad strikes me as the type of person that will, like, do anything to avoid conflict. just because when, like, Jasmine started to, like, open up, he, like, said something really unhelpful, like, let's just play a game, guys. And that's when Tony was like, all right, no, but, like, seriously, Jasmine, like, what was bothering you?
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's, like, a bad thing, but I think that he, like, doesn't necessarily see the value in, like, actually working through a conflict. He's like, why can't we just be friends?
Yeah, good. Very good. Yeah, that's, we drew Jasmine out of the rabbit hole, but it seems like Brad is still in there with Scattergories.
Yeah, I think one thing the team did really well is just asking for forgiveness. So once Jasmine shared just what her problems were and how she felt offended, I saw the way other characters asked for forgiveness right away. I thought it was really cool.
That's right. Yeah, there was, you know, apologies are a funny thing. It's easy to say I'm sorry. It's a little harder to ask will you forgive me. There was a lot of saying I'm sorry here, but it's a step in the right direction. At first there was none of that. Now there's some of it. So that's probably, you can put that in both columns. Maybe one
also,
or two more.
Also, I think instead of, like, downgrading each other and, like, talking smack, they were, like, actually encouraging each other and, like, trying to, like, make time for themselves, like, sacrifice, like, a frisbee game or...
Yeah.
Heather was thinking about, I mean, Michelle was thinking about, like... whether she should go hang out with her boyfriend or not, like, just to be with the group. So, like, they're kind of, like, coming together close instead of, like, downgrading each other.
That's right. Yeah, and one of the things that, as we scripted this thing, is that in a if this were a Disney movie, everybody's best friends and completely understood and all the problems went away. In real life, that usually doesn't happen, right? You have conflict, and it's not like, hey, we're all cool, contrary to what, Brad thinks. You're like, we're all friends again. Yeah. In real life, it's like, yeah, okay, there's, Michelle is on the right track. It's like, maybe I shouldn't hang out with my boyfriend tonight. Maybe I should do something else. But at the same time, she's like, Jasmine needs a boyfriend. That's the solution here, and we'll keep working on that. One more observation, something you saw that was good or bad in terms of using these tools we talked about?
I think just one more thing I noticed was just that I think the first conversation they were having, they both, all of them felt very attacked in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think this wasn't really stated in this conversation here, but they all kind of realized we have the common purpose, mutual purpose of, hey, we're all friends. We actually really care about each other and we actually really can forgive each other.
Right.
So that was really important.
Yeah. Good. All right. I'm going to invite Beth up to tell us how to master our stories and see the rest of our skit come together.
All righty. I really appreciate what Tom was telling us there about some of these key tools for building unity. Tools like creating safety, seeking forgiveness, and building mutual purpose. Those things are really, really significant when we're working to resolve conflict. I want to, for the last part of what I'm going to do here, share the tool that I have learned that has been the most helpful for me. And that tool for me was the idea that I am currently, in any given situation, interpreting that situation, and that I am acting and reacting out of my interpretation to that situation. Knowing that means that I can learn to recognize my interpretation, and then I can ask myself questions about what I'm believing that can get me back on track to building unity instead of whatever other track I have gotten off onto, whether the silent or the violent track. So when I say that I am always in the process of interpreting something, I want to give you a couple of examples of what interpretations might look like. I don't think these are interpretations that only I have in situations. I suspect that they are more human universal interpretations. One interpretation that I like to use in the middle of a conflict, when somebody I feel has been unfair or mean to me, is the victim interpretation. I am the victim. I have no blame for anything in this situation. I have nothing. Can you even believe, right? I can really paint myself as innocent very quickly in my own head. I don't even know I'm doing it. When I say it to you here and now, it's like, I can't believe she would do that. That's so dumb. But in my own head, it happens so fast, and I don't even see that I've painted myself as blameless. The second interpretation that I am good at, maybe even better at, instead of making myself innocent, I can make the other person the villain in the situation. And when I do that, I say, I can't believe this person. I did this, and I did that, and I did the other, and I even went the extra mile and did this thing over here. But this rotten person only cares about themselves. They don't care about me. They don't care about this bigger situation. They're unwilling to make any sacrifices. All they care about is themselves. And it is really easy for me. I am, in fact, I think, highly skilled at creating villain stories and villain interpretations in my own head whenever a conflict arises. When I'm doing this, what I'm really doing is overemphasizing the other person's guilt and assuming that every motive that they have in the situation is bad. The third type of story or interpretation that I make in my own head within a split second, I mean, I don't even know it's happened and I'm already acting out of it, is a hopeless interpretation. And that's when I walk away from a conflict thinking in my head, no matter what I do, it won't make a difference. It's not even worth it to go back to this person. They are just determined. There's just no way out. Should I just look for a new friend. Maybe this friendship isn't salvageable. Maybe I need to look for a new job because this boss is not going to change. I know I've been telling myself a hopeless story. Now, when I stop or when any of us stop and consider how we're reacting and trace our thoughts back to understand what kind of story we've told ourselves, perhaps a victim story, a villain story, or a hopeless story, maybe some other kind of story, we actually have the opportunity to start asking ourselves questions about that interpretation and to move from being right
to being reconciled, as my pastor would say. Those two things are usually pretty exclusive. If you're determined to be right, you're pretty unlikely to get much reconciliation. And reconciliation begins in my own heart when I ask myself these key questions. Here are my questions that are just, I mean, life changers for me. The first question that I ask is, what story have I told myself here? And I try to work back through my thoughts to think about, okay, what have I told myself about who I am and who the other people are in this situation? What do I believe about them right now? And then the second question I ask myself is, why would a reasonable, rational, decent human being do or say what this person did or said? Why would a reasonable, rational, decent human being do or say what this person did or said? When I ask myself that, what I'm really doing, I'm just using a very practical way of applying Philippians 4:8. Philippians 4:8 says, whatever is true or noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, praiseworthy, think about these things. So I'm asking myself to think about those things. Think about the good things in this person and what good things might have driven them to act or say the things that they've done or said. This question, it has really, really changed my stories and changed my ability to respond differently to friends and coworkers and family members and you name it. Now that I've kind of shared the thing that's helped me most and that I hope is helpful for you, we're going to jump back into the final part of our act here. And we're going to let our characters run wild as you listen. Would you please observe with me what stories our characters are telling themselves about each other? Their actions might actually tell you even more than what their words tell you about the stories that they've made up in their heads. You might know it through the questions that they ask themselves and others. So at the end, maybe we can talk about what stories they're telling, what they're doing well. All righty, take it away, gang.
Brad, are you okay? You haven't said much, and I know I kind of melted down there. Sorry about that.
Yeah, thanks, Jazz. I think it's all good.
You don't sound so sure.
Well, truth is, I'm not so sure. I'm trying to figure out what I think. I mean, I'm glad you're not melting down anymore, but... Like, really, I am glad, but I don't know. Is anything going to change?
Wait, what do you mean?
I mean, I've been looking forward to playing games with you guys for the past 4 weeks, like, and I still want to. I do, but as you're all talking, I'm realizing that I guess I've been looking forward to playing with you guys for the past 4 months.
Aw, Brad, that's sweet. Yeah, I've been looking forward to it, too.
Yeah, but, well, Shelly, you had Mike the whole time, right? Like, 5 months and all? Like, congrats, by the way, seriously. And Tony's tight with his family, and Jazz, I know that you work like crazy, whether you're here or at home. But me? Like, I don't have any of that. And guys, like, I'm not kidding when I say that, like, I've been looking forward to playing games with you guys for the past 4 months. Like, that's all I've been looking forward to. For the past 4 months. So, Jazz, now you're sharing about how hard these past few months have been, like, feeling all alone and stuff. I'm sitting here thinking, like, yeah, like, that's my world. And so, I really do want to hang out and have fun and play a game tonight, but then what? Like, are we going to go do it again tomorrow or another month from now?
Thanks, Shelly. I think you and I are officially bad friends.
Seriously. Guys, I'm really sorry. And you know what? I'm going to talk to Mike tonight and see if we can start getting these game nights back into our schedules like they were last year.
But see, that's the thing. This year can't be like last year.
Sure it can. Why couldn't it?
Well, because of you and Mike, Shelly.
What? What's that got to do with anything? We hung out together all the time last year. All of us, Mike included, right here in your room, usually.
That's my point. Why'd you even come and hang out in the first place last year? Shell, because that's... You were dating Carl almost the whole time.
Sorry, bro. You kind of lost me there.
Okay. Carl was my best friend the first semester, right? Hung out all the time, had basically the same classes, same schedule. It was great. And then he started dating Shelly. So she starts hanging out, which is great, but I see Coral less. Eventually, not even at class half the time. So yeah, we'd all get together, but Carl and I just didn't click anymore, I guess. Anyway, so that was the group of us, but then because Jazzy is tight with Shelly, she started coming too. And you were there because Carl's your roommate. I mean, was your roommate.
So, what are you saying? That Carl not coming back is my fault?
No, Shelly. What Carl chose to do is Carl's problem, and I know he was into other stuff too, and that's probably why he didn't come back. It's just that last year everyone was hanging out because of how tight they were with everyone else, but the whole summer up till now, I mean, where'd everybody go, right?
I see. So you feel like no one is coming here for you. I had Shelly, Tony had Carl, Shelly had Carl, and then Mike. But no one's got Brad. Is that it?
I mean, I guess. How else do you explain last year feeling kind of like some kind of reality show where we all practically live together? And then this year, it's like, I don't know, our show got canceled or something.
If it makes you feel any better, Brad, tonight has felt an awful lot like a reality show to me.
Yeah. I guess I just kind of melted down too. Huh. Sorry, guys. I guess we all got some dirty laundry to air.
It's okay. I guess if I thought that all of my friends were basically ignoring me for 4 months, I'd do the same. Worse, actually.
Dang, guys, can I just set the record straight by saying that I've wanted to stay in touch all summer, but between stuff with work and caring for my brother, it just didn't even occur to me that I should have given you guys a call. Man, that sounds pretty lame, you know, when I say it, but I don't know. Let me try again. Brad, you're my friend. I'm not here right now because of Carl. I'm here because of you. And same for you, Jazzy. Kind of Shelly, but, you know, yeah.
Thanks, Tony. I don't hate you, too. Brad, I gotta be honest. It kind of stinks that you felt like none of us cared about you.
I didn't say...
I'm not done. Shut up. It kind of stinks that you felt like that none of us cared about you, but it sounds like that's exactly what we deserve to hear. And I get it. I felt that way, too. I mean, I just had a fight with Mike about that very thing like a week ago.
Well, you guys fight?
Okay, you shut up, too. Jazzy, from now on, only you can speak. Really, though, sometimes it's just really easy to believe that the good guys are actually bad guys, but it's not true. And Jazzy was right. Things have been going overall great with Mike, and, well, maybe I did get a little obsessed. But not anymore. I'm going to text Mike right now and invite him to come here instead of going out like we planned.
Whoa.
I know, right? I'm a little surprised myself.
I admit, that's unexpected. Thanks, Shell. That means a lot. And listen, I don't want you guys to feel like I'm suddenly super needy and stuff. I don't want you guys all changing your schedules and saying nice stuff and just to make me happy. I just want to feel like part of the group.
Brad, you are part of the group.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. And you know what? We should all take a picture and send it to Carl. Let's show him that we miss him, too. Hey, Tony, take our picture.
Sweet.
Okay, pause. Last set of internal monologues. Tony.
Whew. Well, that was something. How is it you can know a group of people so well and yet not really know them at all? I guess I have a lot more to learn about being a good friend.
I'm so glad I came tonight. I love these guys, and I haven't been treating them right. I do a lot of talking about how great Mike is. I'm going to start telling these guys how great they are, too.
Wow. Here I was thinking that no one cared, and here Brad was thinking that I didn't care either. He was a lot less mean about it than I was, too. I'm really thankful for these guys.
Yikes, I sure had a lot more going on inside than I thought I did. And Shelly's right. I see how I've been making these good guys into bad guys. But they aren't bad guys. They're all right. Now, I wonder If we still have time for one game of Dominion.
All right. Well done, gang.
Anybody? Anybody?
All right, to the rest of you then, taking our questions back out here, what did you notice as these friends were wrapping up their conflict with each other? What stories were they telling themselves? And how did their actions show you that?
It seemed like Brad was playing hopeless a lot, especially in the beginning, whenever he was saying, like, it can never be like it was last year.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and that was driving his running away. Yeah, his silence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Brad was also victimizing Michelle, or not victimizing, villainizing, saying that it was her fault that Carl wasn't coming back and things like that. Mm. At first.
Yeah. Yeah, he gave her a lot of power in the situation. What else did you notice? What did you see that they were doing well, or what were they not doing so well in this last part of the conversation? All the way in the back.
I think it became more about each other, like more selfless, and so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, wasn't that crazy how there was increasing safety to the extent that they actually, some of them even shared the stories that they were telling about each other. Yeah, oh, I guess I've been believing that you were, I guess I've been thinking that, yeah, that was a lot of safety to be able to be that open. Yeah, what else?
Yeah, it seems like they really got to the place where they found mutual purpose, that they wanted to remain friends and see, even see their friendship grow this year and have it long lasting and not just end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they weren't. It wasn't just going to, it didn't just so happen. This next year it was going to have to be worked on, but it was worth it to them. Yeah, they really found a mutual purpose in that. There's still some work that needs to be done for them, right? Things aren't totally resolved. I mean, I don't know about you, but I want to know how people weren't responding to Jasmine's text. That bothers me still. I'm upset about that. You know? I think she might be due. Like, I think there's still some stuff in there that they're going to need to talk about. It's not all totally done, but they're on a much better track and they have a really good footing for coming back and saying, hey, I was thinking about that thing that we talked about the other night and there's something in the back of my mind that's been bothering me. Can I talk with you about that? We definitely we get into conflict situations like this. I don't know if all of yours end up with this kind of, okay, my gut is not clenched listening to them here anymore at the end. I can move on. Sometimes they kind of end with that bad feeling still in the pit of your stomach where there hasn't been much resolution achieved. And we want to work on doing everything we can not to end that way. We want to work on applying these principles. We are going to need to wrap up here. I'm going to go ahead and ask Tom to conclude us and send us out the door, and we'd love to chat with you if you have any further comments later.
This, you know, we've had an hour here to talk about a crash course in conflict resolution. As Beth said, there's so much more that could be learned, but our aim here was to give you guys a few useful tools you can use next time you see conflict happening. So you now know how to recognize silence and violence. You've seen how to build safety through asking forgiveness and contrasting. You've been able to ask yourself helpful questions about why a rational, reasonable, decent person would do what they're doing. And so just practice what you've learned here. And I'd also recommend, Beth and I both have really found this book very helpful. I don't think it's out on the book table at all, but check it out on Amazon. It's a really useful book. In fact, we brought two copies with us that we're going to give away. And so the people who get to have it, has anybody been in a conflict today with somebody else here? Okay, well, that's good. Fall conference, Sebastian. Who here thinks they probably had the most recent big conflict? Got one over there? Anybody else? All right. Enjoy. make a lot of use of it, and you guys are dismissed.
You've been listening to Teaching from Disciple Makers. To learn more about Disciple Makers, check out our website at www.dm.org. Follow us on Twitter at Disciple Makers, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Disciple Makers. Disciple Makers, reaching the campus, reaching the world.